Elder Island, they're a trio hailing from Bristol. Their sound takes the very best elements from pop, folk, dance, R&B, electronica, house music, and more. I don't know, their influences are pretty varied. But they expertly take all of these kind of different features and blend them together into these incredible soundscapes, which just have to be heard. My words really can't do their impeccable work justice. You just need to hear it. So without further ado, here's the chat I had with Katie, Luke, and David. We talked about new releases, their upcoming tour, Modular Synthesis, and I also got them to share a couple of tracks. So I got them to share one track that they've been listening to a lot in the last 12 months, and also one that's been formative, either formative for them personally or kind of formative in how their sound as a band has developed. So, if it's all right with you guys, then we'll start with the new album. So, can you tell me a little bit about Swimming Static?
So I suppose essentially it is an album written in one space and one time, quite intensely between all of us, because we started it just before the lockdowns, but then we were locked down in our studio room. And yeah, I think it's been formulated from those restrictions, but also maybe some of the technical problems and those sort of things that it's kind of shaped it, but it's a close album. I think it's quite intimate, because of those reasons.
Yeah, it's quite dark because of those reasons as well.
Yeah, there's many sounds that have kind of crept into this album. Like when we went into making this album, it was the first time we focused on music and nothing but. We didn't have any sort of other work commitments or anything like that in play. And it would been January 2020 now that we basically kind of picked a load. We gave ourselves kind of a budget for equipment each and sort of bought those pieces of kit, and as throughout February, when we were like kind of doing the initial sessions and jams, it was like the learning point of that and finding a kind of footing with it, which helped shape it a lot.
I think if COVID hadn't have happened, it would have been a different album, definitely, because we would have been a lot more freer to be experiencing outer things in the real world, like going out and just enjoying ourselves, and I think that would have put a different color on the final outlook of the album. Because we were locked in, it meant that we were just locked into writing the album and listening to it and re-going over it over and over again. It made the songs develop in the ways that they have ended up being finished.
Yeah, it was a heightened level of focus that we could not have achieved had we not been locked in a room.
Yeah, because I read before that, you kind of your approach to recording in the past has kind of been to do these jam sessions and just kind of let the tape roll and then go back to it and look at where certain things work and certain things don't work. So it's like quite an organic process. I was just wondering whether, not touring or not doing gigs, whether that's kind of changed the process as well, because whether you play the tracks out and you sort of see the ones or the parts of it that work, the parts of it that maybe don't necessarily work, and has the lack of touring kind of fed into how the new album's developed?
It can sometimes hinder it doing shows whilst we're trying to write, because it kind of prolongs what our focus is. Like it was good that we could just focus in on writing music and getting an album done, because when we do our live shows, we try and alter the way that we've written the songs in a live context, and so sometimes we can get quite caught up playing them live like that, or like re-editing them for them live. So it's kind of helped, but I know what you mean. It sometimes we have benefited from learning the songs and then playing it live. It's hard to give a definite answer
Yeah, it's a
without
really
having
interesting
doing it.
question.
Yeah.
Because I think maybe at first, when we first started the album, we were very conscious about, like, oh, well, how would you play this live? Whereas I think as the process went along, and obviously we weren't playing live and we didn't have that connection, maybe we did start to kind of layer more in a very much more impossible way, that we wouldn't be able to play it exactly kind of layer for layer live. So maybe we kind of added
certain
a few
songs
more. Certain songs especially, they've got a lot in them. But I suppose that's the wonderful challenge eventually, like trying to transform those into a live performance.
There's certain songs that have a lot more of a concept to them, and so those certain songs we were like, right, let's really lean in on that concept and make it sonically fitting to that concept, which will be near enough impossible unless we're still figuring out that now.
But I mean, that's probably something that you're gonna, you know, look at when you're touring as well. You know, is the first gig necessarily going to be exactly the same as the last gig? I imagine you'll probably want to keep switching things up a bit as you go through the tours, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it does happen. Like, you do the first ones, you're like, I don't really enjoy playing that song in a live context as much as I thought we would.
Yeah.
At the start, you're like, that just, it doesn't fit in as well, so like, try and scrap that and put a different one in. And it is, you sometimes find tracks which, like, you wouldn't expect to kick off in a live kind of environment, and they do, and you're like, okay, that one, we need to keep that in the set every time.
Or extend a section of it, because you're like, wow, people are really getting down to this bit, so we'll just make, we'll like, draw it out a bit so people got more time to enjoy. And even like the kind of evolution that you get from learning the tracks, and at first obviously you're kind of like really trying to hit those points and play tightly, but it's kind of much more of a struggle to get there. Whereas by the time you've played for like a few months and you've done the same or like similar sets or the tracks, you have a bit more headspace to play with things a bit more. So these sort of songs evolve in that way.
So what are the new bits of equipment that you guys picked up for the new album? This is the kind of studio gearhead in me talking, like, I'm interested.
So my bits were, we really kind of lucked out with the fact that we invested in that and sorted the studio out and did a whole rewire and did like a full revamp before we started, so that we, as soon as lockdown happened, we were set up for it. But my little bits were, I got a Tempest, which was the most important one for me, actually, because I love playing with pads and playing melodies and bass lines with pads and things like that, and it's just the best pad machine there is, straight up.
Yes.
And then a few little, an IntelliJL modular system, so we've gone a bit more Eurorack based. And then a few little pieces of SSL as well. We've got a little SSL X desk and the Fusion, which has helped shape it a lot.
So you're bringing the modular on the live show?
Yes, but kind of already started that last with the Omnitone. But mainly just for like a mixer kind of capacity, but there's definitely a few more pieces now, but it's in the process at the moment. And that's the kind of, the one benefit we have right now is that it's allowed us a bit more time to sort of, instead of just crash right into a tour now and be like, right, finish the album, we need to go promote it, we need to go on tour. It's actually allowed us a bit more breathing space to be like, these are all the issues I had last time touring. We still want to be able to have a portable rig for fly shows and festivals in some places. So it's like really having the time to try the gear out, make sure it's working. Because the last thing you want is, there's so much equipment made nowadays which it's released, but it's released too early. And a year, like the first users of that piece of gear, like you find firmware issues that are just kicking off and you have pieces of equipment just crashing you. And it's like, if anything like that ever rears its head, it's never coming out for a show ever.
Buggy gear
it allows like to figure that stuff out instead of it happening on the road.
Yeah.
And how about you guys, what were the big purchases for you guys?
Mine was probably quite a few preamps. I got a nice lunchbox for the 500 series, just some like API preamps, and like a few radial ones, because I think on my live setup I've got a lot of kind of ins and outs with so I can kind of string loopers together and this made that much easier because it had like a lot of ins and outs, but within the kind of going in and out of these nice preamps, so it meant that I could have really good quality output but still have that interchangeable quality to it.
I could double looper
double layer looper was really good. No, maybe triple layer looper and another looper and a little Novation base station, which is like my one finger prodding, like absolutely loving it. So
lovely workhorse of a synth.
I got a Euro rack as well, so I got a lot of delays. I used it as an effects brain, really. So I just got loads of effects models in Eurorack, and so I was just running like synths and drum machines through that, and just messing around with like resonators and different things on that. Mm. I used that a hell of a lot. It was really fun experimenting with that. Just like, okay, we've got a delay. Add a delay on that delay. No one can make those delays better. Some more delay, and yeah, certain songs are really spacey because of it.
But it's really great having that kind of tactile response. Like you can really like get very creative with it very quickly. Yeah. I've got one of the the Moog Mother 32s, the semi-modular ones with the patch bay. So that was kind of my first foray into it, and I've got the VCV rack. Bit of software just to experiment a bit before forking out and realizing that I'm out of my depth and there's too many cables, and so it's a burgeoning interest. I'm not going to say that I could, you know, I could probably get an oscillator going maybe at the moment, but...
If you've got an iPad, I would suggest the Moog Model 15 app, because that's like a really, it's like their modular system, but it's got really great tutorials on how to patch. And because it's on your iPad, it's very, you know, tactile and easy to just wire different things with your fingertips. It's really fun because you've got a sequencer or delays, and it makes quite a fat sound when you plug it in, quite surprisingly.
So in terms of like, the live show, is it a bit more sort of scripted, a bit more rehearsed? Or do you like to keep an element of surprise in there for yourselves?
Both.
Both.
Yeah, a bit of both. Because it's like, there's obviously, it's rehearsed so we can play it together. But obviously there's no kind of like backing track or system like that. It's all with hardware sequences and loopers. But we're all completely synchronized with each other. So that we can very quickly create a loop that stays in time and keep building. And that's how we're able to kind of rebuild a bigger sound than what three people could do just playing one instrument each. And obviously we play through like the kind of arrangements of the tracks, but we mess around and we go back to the kind of process that we use while making it in the first time round, which is so much more raw and loose. And just like, so it kind of incorporates both, where we've got the refined aspect and we kind of know we need to change here, we need to click this button here so we can go from verse to chorus and those kind of stages, but as well we can just be like, just gonna carry on going actually. These guys want to change, but I'm not.
Oh, that's the worst. You're there like building it up and Dave Starr hasn't dropped it, you're like building, but I can't build anymore. I'm on my apex.
Looking at me thinking that I'm doing it, and I'm looking at Dave.
I'm looking around very cross.
Sometimes it's vice versa. It's like, who isn't dropping yet?
And he's like, I'm not dropping yet. And you see everyone's face in here. They're just waiting for it. Wait for more.
Blinking tease.
Half hour build. They're still waiting.
But we do try and keep it as close to the song as possible, depending on which songs we know we can eke it out more. Like some songs like Bamboo, we just keep it to, like, it's such a popular song that it's like, right, let's just try and get it as close to the record. So we do, like, with the new album, we've got a lot of figuring out to do, but I know there's, you know, like, there's songs like Feral that have such a solid structure of a song that took us quite a long time to make sure it's that structure and get happy with it, that we'll probably get as close to playing that song as we can. And then once we're happy with it, it's like, okay, do we want to extend it, or where can it go to be extended?
Yeah, it's very much the front and back ends that get manipulated a lot.
Yeah.
And like, because obviously we're looping as well, that some of the starting points of the track might just be drawn out for a little while to get some initial chord loops in, or some of the backbone parts, which then allow, all right, and like Kate will look over and see, yeah, I've got a loop in, and then she'll start singing. And then from that point, we've kind of got our plits that we play along with. And then by the end, we're like, yep, we just keep going and push it, and then try and kind of put a DJ approach to it a bit as well, where we'll then, where we can, mix into another track, like try and keep it the same, using tracks which are at the same tempo or the same key and things like that, so we can keep the energy going on that kind of way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, certainly with sort of artists like Fortet, the kind of the magic of his live show does seem to be in these loopers, so it's quite interesting to hear you guys saying that as well. They must make everything a lot more flexible, a lot more organic.
I can't really imagine doing it to backing track. I think it'd be horribly panicky. Like, oh, I'm behind.
Yeah, just like rehearsing, you've got to do your thing. Yeah. I think for us, because we don't operate in that way, we'd feel uncomfortable performing in that way.
Mm.
Whereas we've always, I think from day dot of playing together, there's always been a looper involved.
Yeah.
Even just for like creating weird textures and capturing little components and ideas.
I was looking through the remix album, the Omnitone Collection remix album. And obviously it's an incredibly strong and diverse sort of roster of artists that you got through to remix. Were any of them like surprising? You know, they took the track in a different way than you were expecting it.
Sujeto, I thought was going to be different. We followed his music for quite a long time, and I didn't expect him to come back with like an acid house track. Like he went really squelchy and like Roland TB-303s with it. Like I thought he was going to be a bit more like his usual stuff, which is a bit more breakbeaty, like hip hop esque. So when we asked him, I thought that's what he was going to come back with, but he came back with something different, and it was like, yeah, okay, and I'm digging it. Whatever, it's dirty, it's different.
I tell you what, the newest one, which was like a remix of our first single Feral, where we got Leatherette to do it. I thought that was really, I mean, maybe not so much of a surprise, but I loved that he transformed the song into something completely different.
That's what I like about remixes, when they're done like that. Really turn it on the head. Like, Leatherette's very good at doing that, at being like, right, this is what it sounds like, this is how I'm going to do it, and really make it different.
Is Leatherette someone that you've been sort of following for a while? And I know that you featured one of their tracks in your summer Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
Was the remix before that or after the feature, or is it just someone that you've been excited to work with for a while?
When the opportunity came up, I jumped at it, because I've since hearing like his first remix of Bibio back in like 2009, I think it was. I remember Katie's boyfriend put me onto Bibio, and then I found that song as a remix on that album, and it was just like, when I knew that was possible.
Yeah, but we were really happy with that remix. It was incredible.
Mm. And so I came across you guys through someone that I was stuck in Boston, Lincolnshire with on placement. We were there for 8 weeks and there was very little else to do there, as I'm sure you can. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Boston.
In Lincolnshire?
Yeah. In Lincolnshire, it's in its depths. It's the far east coast. There's nothing there. So I was there for 8 weeks and with not very much to do. And I was living there with two guys, Mark and Alex, and they got me on to you guys. So it only seemed right that I let them kind of put a question to you, if that's all right. So Alex was wondering who out there in the sort of current musical world that you'd like to collaborate with. I know that you spoke in one of your last interviews about working with The Invincible, and is it Daniel Carey? Is it Daniel Carey?
Carey, yeah.
Carey, yeah. He And you know, I've heard his remix of his recent remix of Georgia, and I thought, yeah, this, you know, it just makes sense. That's a perfect sort of collaboration. But is there anyone else who's popped up for you, you know, since then that, you know, you'd love to collaborate with?
David Holmes was always someone that kind of kept creeping up for me. Like after he did the soundtrack with one of his bands for Killing Eve, and it was so good. And I've always been a huge, huge fan of his stuff. But like, as a producer, would love to work with him at some point down the line.
Mm. So it's got a little bit of a 60s twist.
Yeah, it's just like he's always got that like really raw organic sound, even if it's like his big brassy stuff, which he did for like Ocean's 11 and all of that, or it's just always sounds so well done and so well considered. But yeah, there's something about like what he was doing with like the sort of the darker kind of thing, a bit more like almost punky-esque in some places with the Killing Eve stuff. That was like quite an inspirational sort of thing for me, like watching that second season was like, whoa.
I think not producer, but quite a dream would be maybe Unknown Mortal Orchestra.
That'd be sick.
Because I feel like...
Even if you produce, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I would really enjoy that. And then all of his work with like tape and just, yeah.
He's got a good ear, hasn't he?
He's got such a good ear. Yeah. I want it. Mm. Brain attached, not just the ear.
I adore Nigel Godrich. If he could ever touch anything, it would be great. Like, he could just walk into the house, that'd be enough.
would you bow down?
Yeah, I'd be like...
I'm so inspired.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming to my house.
Yeah.
Put him on the credits.
Yeah. Can I put... Yeah. Yeah, Nigel Godrich would be amazing just to hang out with. Collaboration would be the best, obviously, but yeah.
Just to pick his brain a bit.
Yeah, he'll probably just oversimplify something and you're just like, oh, but it's not like that, is it, Nigel? Nigel, you're being modest now. Come on, tell me the secret. And then he's like, there's no secret. And I'm like, you're a liar, get out.
The secret is, there is no secret. Shut up, no.
Oh, I just don't spend much time doing it. You're modest, get out.
You'd have to lie about it afterwards. You'd have to pretend he was completely different.
Yeah.
Just to cope with it.
Yeah, you made a mess in the house.
Just going back to your live shows, actually, I completely forgot. I know you've said in the past that you kind of invested some money in having some of your own equipment in terms of like the lights and the kind of the background kind of stuff. Is there going to be anything sort of new or anything that you're excited to sort of introduce for the upcoming tour?
Yeah,
there will be new stuff. What it is yet, don't know, because we haven't kind of made it that far yet. It's like we've got a lighting rig which we built ourselves. We're DIY wherever we can. If we can make it, we will.
Like the album cover.
Exactly.
On the tone.
It's much more rewarding doing that. It may be a hell of a lot more time consuming, but it just feels we understand what's going on there and have full control over it, and we know what we can do creatively.
And we can get it closer to what we actually want.
Yeah, what you want to try and achieve. But we don't know yet. Don't know if we're gonna like just expand on what we've got or if we're gonna recycle what we've got into something different or
I've got a few sneaky ideas.
There's always some ideas that it's like, right, can we actually build that? Can we
think like a tiered water feature?
Well, you're not too far.
I mean, I'm taking it.
But yeah, there's still a lot of ideas that we haven't executed yet because we didn't have the money last time round. Mm. So hopefully we might be able to build on them. We built the light rig with the idea of it being like modular and that it can be built up and expanded on.
Yeah.
And so when we did it, it was like the basic that we could just do at the time. So it is a case of, right, what else can we expand on now?
Yeah, and that's it. It's all kind of designed so we can travel with it. In the sense that, like, obviously for our bigger shows, like London headline shows, places like that, that we will hire an engineer, we'll hire a load of kit and expand on it. But for going, like when we did the States for our, like, the second tour, second time doing the States on the Omnitone tour, like, we flew the lights with us because they were small and compact and manageable in that kind of way, and kind of still want to keep that aspect because
it makes such a big difference on a small stage. If you just have a static light on you after a few tracks, it gets boring.
You can tell like the feeling that you kind of, you don't get the same response from the crowd, therefore we don't respond as well, and that you always need that bounce off energy. Like, it's always going to be a better show when you can tell people are getting more excited, there's something more going on.
Have you ever played any kind of, because, you know, just you saying that, have you ever considered playing nightclubs that might have the capacity, not just like an interesting lighting rig, but also the capacity for you guys to be able to perform properly? Or is it more sort of traditional venues that you've tended to look at?
We did Printworks in February. That was our last show, which was amazing. Yeah, it was kind of pushing doing a bit more club based stuff. And we, if the opportunity's there, like, we always jump at a club based system over a live venue system because we want the bass. Like, we're bass heads, we love it. So, like, going into a club which has got a full blown function one in a smaller system and compared to just a few tops and a sub or two, then we're like, we'll take that one because it will just translate our music so much more. We don't have any backline, we don't use anything, we've got all in ears, so it's all like the PA is the most important thing in the room. So whoever's got the best PA will be the one that we want to play out.
I suppose we twist a lot of the tracks so they are a bit more danceable and a bit more like you can go to them harder. So yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's, it fits better in a club atmosphere than a bit more of a proper sort of
a venue. Yeah, but then we're adaptable as well in some ways, that like when we know, we always want to do the research of like what sound system's got what and what's got this going on. And like with our sound engineer, he'll be getting all the specs and he's an absolute nerd for it. So he's like constantly texting us being like, they've got this sound system here at this venue. Oh my God, I can't wait. And he's like, man, it's 3 months away. Calm down. But it means that we can, like, we know what we can do that night.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got this habit of just like...
For anyone who's just listening, he rubs his hands together like you were about to receive some hot food or something.
To be fair to him, a function one is definitely something to get excited about. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I'd love to hear a couple of those tracks like I sort of spoke about. So who's feeling brave, who's feeling confident in their choices and is willing to...
An earworm for me has been... which I've been playing a lot this year, is Anderson .Paak Jewels. I can't stop listening to that song. I love it.
I love it.
Like, I'm in the kitchen, I'll put something on. And it's like, okay, that's going to be the first song, isn't it? I don't know why. I'm addicted to it. It's short, it's sweet. PCH. I really like that one. I know that she used to all the cheapskates, but I just want to ball, show off. I ain't never put my jewels on. I ain't even played my latest, greatest song. I ain't even put my jewels on. Had to make a break, cause the whole joint way too long. Oh yeah. How's it working with Timberland and what's he like? You know you kinda cute with the long braids. A little cool with your sunny shades on. I know that you're ready if you don't go. You know I'm awake if you don't take long. To test the ride smooth down and down the hill. Wait, I don't wanna say it, but I had to say it. We ain't have to do too much to show off, but a nigga had to prove a point. Hold up, I ain't even put my jewels on. I ain't even played my latest, greatest song. I ain't even put my jewels.
I got a sale, but I want to get one free.
I ain't even put my jewels on.
What
a pivotal track, though.
One that kind of opened my eyes as a young kid that I still like just love listening to is like anything on the Hail to the Thief album by Radiohead. Like 2 + 2 = 5 is as an opening track. I just remember hearing that and just being blown away and just like just mind-boggled by the process of like at the time as a kid, I was learning the guitar and I didn't really understand electronics or, you know, sampling or anything like that. I was like quite heavily into indie, and it really like opened my eyes to like what other music could be. And even when I listen to that album now or a track from it, I still always hear something unique, or I'm still like always just captured, or it gives me that light bulb memory of being a kid as well and just being like, oh my god, I love music so much.
Down the tracks, sand
and
January as April showers and two.
Discovery, which I got on CD, and I like my parents listen to a wide variety of music, but not so much electronic. And so when I got that CD, I was just like, what is this? And like, oh, listen to it over and over again. So maybe something off that, I might go like cliche, like, what was it, Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger, just because that was like.
Yeah.
make it, do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger, more than power, power, never, ever, after, work is over, work it, make it, do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
For me, this has actually only been in the last sort of like month or so, because I've not listened to much music last year except for our own Metronomy, The Light. I've been like, I can't stop listening to that track at the moment. We've got like electric scooters in Bristol now, and I keep going out in the evenings if I'm a bit bored on one of them, and I just keep listening to that song, and it's so much fun on a scooter, because you're just like, the streets are empty and you can just kind of scoot around. I'm loving it. I'm absolutely loving it.
That sounds lethal.
They're not that fast. It's all right. They're not that fast.
Thank you.
And then there's too many tracks I think I could list as kind of pivotal ones. It's like what changed over the years, because like Radiohead obviously being a big one, like hearing when I was introduced to Kid A and Amnesia, like hearing them being like, what is this? I couldn't stop listening to them. But Hot Chip, Boy From School, that and that album, The Warning, I remember really, really clearly as being like the first kind of proper electronic, I guess, album that I'd listened to that I was obsessed with, like truly obsessed with. And
I listened to that track the other day, the hi-hats on it are so like, just like the intonation of the hi-hats are just unbelievably
good.
That song's
just, it's just like, that just gets stuck in, and it's so simple in its kind of conception as well, but it's great. And like getting to see them around that time as well, when they're touring that album.
We tried, but we didn't have long.
also one more from that period as well, which was Little Dragon Twice.
Oh, yeah.
Because that, I remember seeing on like MTV2 when that was a thing, like on TV, that was like kind of a massive platform for finding new music when, I can't remember how old it'd been then, maybe like 15. But it was like late night. It was like from like midnight to like one or two in the morning, they'd have this kind of like alternative sessions. And I remember hearing Little Dragon, that and the music video for that for like the first time. I was pretty young and being absolutely blown away by them and have been a fan ever since, basically.
We've often done like festivals and like we've played and then Little Dragon are obviously playing like just a bit after us on a different stage and we're like packing up as fast as possible so we can go and see them play live because it's just like every time it's just magical.
They're probably a whopping influence on us actually, so like kind of the type of band that we aspire to be as well, because they do it so well. They just do it so well.
In wonder steady going under, was it the light wave? So frightening, was it a two wheels? One a mirror holding us dear right now.
Italian old pop. So recently it's called Pino Di Angio, from the Balla album, and the way he uses his voice, like, just it's so good. Just very creatively, and he sings in a very low baritone but also high and sometimes pastes them together. Oh, it's incredible.
Is it something that you're going to try and emulate on future releases, maybe?
I think so. I will try and do it justice. Far l'amore da bambino, veramente fui cacciato dalla scuola perché la professoressa mi faceva molto gola quando facevo il militare, poi la moglie del tenente mi faceva le moine di una presa tra la gente, perciò bambina, se sono qui per te stasera è una fortuna.
Che donna sei, io le inchiodo contro il muro con un'aria da mandrillo, i miei soli souvenir sono rossetti e tacchi a spillo. Le castane le consumo solamente a colazione e le rosse le rifiuto, ne ho già fatto indigestione. Quando sono di tre quarti le regalo a qualche amico, se decido per più tardi le conservo dentro il frigo. Ho deciso, adesso è fatta, con quegli occhi lì da gatta nel mio letto ci scommetto, fili come un vaporetto. Perciò bambina, se sono qui per te stasera è una fortuna. Che donna sei, ballo come un diavoletto, ballo anch'io, tutto perfetto, mentre il cuore nel mio petto mi sfarfalla e mi va stretto. Non capisco che succede, sono confuso ma sincero, io ti guardo all'improvviso, mi innamoro per davvero. Per Gesù che ero ti prego, scorda quello che ti ho detto, nel mio cuore tutto un tratto c'è un amore maledetto. Sul mio letto di gerani, di profumo non ce n'è, io per questo cerco un fiore come fiore ho scelto te. Perciò bambina, se tu sei qui per me stasera, beh sì, è una fortuna.
Are you guys going to be playing Nottingham at some point soon? We'd love to have you.
I think we were going to do a rough trade in store thing again, but I don't know if that's going to happen now because of COVID. I don't think Nottingham didn't go well last time, if I remember correctly. It was Leon Bridges was next door and he took all the power and it.
Not that the gig wasn't good, but the power
was like going all over the place, and we didn't have the best time in setup, and we had a few technical issues that kept rearing their head during the show.
Was that in Rough Trade though?
No, that was in the
actual gig. Show.
Oh, the Rough Trade was amazing though.
Rough Trade was good.
I loved that. Yeah, and everyone was really friendly. Good. We were just all like crammed into that tiny space. That was incredible.
Yeah, I like that Rough Trade, it's funny.
That was really good fun.
Well, hopefully, we'll get to see you in Rough Trade at some point soon. In terms of the upcoming tour, is it still going ahead in kind of summertime, or has it been pushed back a bit?
We're moving it to a safer zone, which is October, November time.
Yeah.
You won't have to do anything. If you've already bought a ticket, you just get contacted by your ticket vendor and they'll sort everything out.
It's annoying. Yeah. It's really annoying. We hate that we have to do this. It's like the worst thing about the whole situation. Everyone and our management and our team would, I guess, over ambitious that it would all be over as soon as possible, COVID. But when you have to like push the dates like once or twice, it's kind of like, I feel bad doing it.
Yeah. But just be safe in the knowledge that we're looking forward to it as much as you guys are, 100%.
Can't wait.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for talking to me, guys. It's been a real pleasure. I know Alex and Mark are going to be very jealous. I hope everything goes well over the next year, and I'm really excited to hear Swimming Static when it comes out.
Thanks. We hope you like it.
I'm excited for it to actually be out as well.
A year of good hard work. It must be nice to see the album like come to fruition. Was it going to be vinyl, CD, digital, the works?
All of them.
Yeah, LPs, digital LP, and yeah.
Deluxe CD.
And your classic CD for your car. So yeah, keep an eye out for it.